So hello everyone, this is Haley St. Dennis with the Institute for Human Rights and Business and Center for Sport and Human Rights. I'm here with Damian Thomas, who's the Museum Curator of Sports at the Smithsonian Institution at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Welcome, Damian.
Thank you.
Now, we're speaking today about a particular point in history of which 2018 marks a very important anniversary. And that is the 50th anniversary since Tommy Smith and John Carlos won the gold and bronze medals, respectively, in the 200-meter Olympics in Mexico City. More remembered, perhaps, than their sporting excellence was the really defiant and iconic protest they made during the medal ceremony over civil rights conditions in the United States at that time. They stood shoeless with their fists held high throughout the entire U.S. national anthem being played. And the silver medalist there, Peter Norman, joined them in wearing a human rights badge on his and Smith and Carlos's jackets as well. So my first question for you really is, what did their protests for civil rights have to do with sport?
Well, I think, you know, it's important to note that their protest was about human rights. Civil rights often refer to laws and refer to the legal process. So in the U.S., when you talk about civil rights, you're often talking about things that are sort of guaranteed by the Constitution, guaranteed by legislation. Whereas human rights are about the outcome. It's about what is people's sort of lived experience like? Are people given dignity? Do people have an opportunity to not just housing in a theoretical sense, but rather what is their real world housing sort of looks like? And I think in terms of thinking about this idea of human rights, they were very specific to make sure that their protest was thought of in a human rights context rather than a civil rights context. And I think it's important to think about the larger context of this moment. The Olympic Project for Human Rights, the group that they were a part of, was founded over a year before the Olympic Games. And there was a lot of talk about what athletes would do at the Olympic Games. Would they boycott? Would they protest in particular ways? And so this was part of a much larger effort to use sports as a vehicle to raise awareness about these human rights violations.
And this was really, I think, also colored by a broader global context, which was the Cold War. Can you speak to the influence that that had on this particular moment in time?
The Cold War is essential to understanding this particular moment, and it's often one that gets overlooked. One of the things that happened in the U.S. in the 1940s and 50s was that African Americans had a hard time sort of drawing attention to how they were part of a global community, because those efforts to link the oppression of African Americans to the oppression of other people of color around the world were often thought of as being inspired by communist influence. And so a number of African American leaders like W.B. Du Bois and Paul Robeson had their passports taken because they refused to adhere to dominant Cold War ideas about race in the United States. So what happens by the late 1960s, those restrictions are no longer there. And now African American athletes and African American people are able to look more globally and to see how their oppression connected with the experiences of other people of color worldwide. And that's why the athletes are using this international space to demonstrate the shared sort of forms of oppression faced by Black people all over the world.
And so what was the global reaction to their protests at that time?
It's mixed. Certainly there are people who are upset because of their willingness to use the Olympic Games, which is seen as somehow an anti-political space or a space where politics don't belong. But the Games have always been political. And others see this as a moment where race is put at the forefront of the Olympic movement. One of the challenges of the Olympics is that athletes represent their countries. and their country's ideals and their country's values, but as individuals, they aren't allowed to sort of represent their own worldview and their own statements about the state of the world. And so many people saw this moment, their protest, as an opportunity for athletes to be at the center of our understanding of both sports and social issues.
And what effect did those reactions have on a personal, individual level for Tommy Smith, John Carlos, but also Peter Norman? Were their livelihoods affected?
Immediately, they faced forms of repression. They also faced forms of support. You know, Tommy Smith and John Carlos were able to do a bit of traveling as sort of spokespeople, speaking out against social injustice. But they also suffered economically, financially, because of this decision. Peter Norman, who also took part in this protest. Peter Norman's part in this protest was to wear this badge that mentioned the Olympic Project for Human Rights. And Peter Norman was Australian, and he was seen as denouncing one of Australia's major allies, South Africa, because he wore that badge, because part of the goal of the Olympic Project for Human Rights was to ensure that South Africa, which at the time practiced apartheid, was kept out of the Olympic movement. And so because he was seen as taking this stand against South Africa, he was ostracized when he returned home. He also qualified for the 1972 Games, but were not allowed to compete because he had taken this stand in alignment with Tommy Smith and John Carlos.
I mean, what change did this protest lead to, if any?
I think, you know, sometimes it's a bit complicated to isolate individual moments. But I think what that protest did is it inspired a number of other people to become involved. You talk to people from that era and they talk about how often you went into people's homes and you saw a poster of that particular moment. Also, the black fist, which had been used, the raised fist, which had been used as a symbol of a social protest since at least the 1930s, became identified with the black power struggle. And so these athletes were seen as, in many ways, the embodiment of this particular movement designed to increase opportunities for African Americans in American society. But I also think that there is an important moment where this protest in some ways marked the end of a moment, because one of the things you don't see is this wholesale effort to create change within the United States by this particular time after this incident where the U.S. is embarrassed globally. And the moment that I'm speaking about is that throughout the early days of the Cold War, African Americans were able to use international condemnation of U.S. race relations as an opportunity to push and a fight for equality and civil rights and those other improvements. But what we know is that by 1968, the U.S. government is no longer fearful of international condemnation of African Americans' civil rights and lack of opportunity. And so the lack of an official response from the government also speaks to the way that that space in that moment where African Americans could use international condemnation as a push, as a drive for greater rights and freedoms close.
Flashing forward really to today, I mean, a lot of comparisons to Smith and Carlos have been made recently in relation to Colin Kaepernick kneeling during the U.S. national anthem in support of and raising awareness around inequalities in America still 50 years later. The reaction immediately was harsh. He was not re-signed with the team he was playing for at the time and was a free agent for about 2 years. But just this recently, was signed by the global brand Nike as one of their new faces. How much of a watershed moment is this for athletes finding new and powerful allies to amplify and, to a certain extent, help protect their voice?
I think there are a couple of points that speak to the synergies between the protest in the 1960s and the current protest. For me, the most significant issue is that Tommy Smith and John Carlos did not start a movement. Colin Kaepernick did not start a movement, but rather they're responding to social movements that are already at play. And so for me, the key moment, the key point is that African-American athletes, one, have a role to play in larger social movements. It's usually not as the leader of those movements, but what athletes can do is to amplify in mainstream conversations that are often happening on the margins. So when people were protesting in Ferguson in New York around police brutality over the last couple of years, when someone like Colin Kaepernick and other athletes take a stand, people in the mainstream have to take notice of it because it has come into their consciousness and into the world in which they're living. So I think these two moments both speak to important ways that athletes can help a movement that's already underway.
So my last question, you curated the sports exhibit within the new Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., the National Museum of African American History and Culture. It includes a very prominent and beautiful display on the Smith and Carlos demonstration, as well as an array of artifacts and imagery that showcase sport and human rights throughout U.S. history. What's the main message you want visitors to take away when visiting?
The main message is that sports matter, and they matter far beyond the playing field. The reason we wanted to put that statue of Tommy Smith, John Carlos, and Peter Norman at the front of the sports gallery is that we wanted to make sure that from the very beginning that people understood that we wanted to use sports to talk about larger political, social, and cultural moments. And so the sports gallery not only celebrates great athletic accomplishment, it also situates sports within larger national and international conversations. And so what the museum tries to do through its 12 inaugural galleries, is to provide entry points to people, provide people with opportunities to think about the significance of race, to think about the significance of African American history in ways that are familiar and comfortable to them. And hopefully what we're able to do is to get people to at least one entry point to think about the centrality of the African-American struggle for greater rights and freedoms within the United States, to get people to think about how it matters within the United States, but also how it connects to larger structures and struggles around the world.
Well, thank you, Damian, very much for your time and helping us mark this important anniversary.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.